On this computer. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync for what I believe is July 21st, 2020. If July 21st is not a Tuesday, then it's some number that's right around that time.
I got it.
Woo! All right. This is good. Great. You threw me off, Theo. I had the whole thing rehearsed, clearly, because I'm not at all a wing it type of person. We have four people on the call today, three core team regulars, and one person who I'm not aware of having been on a sync call before. I'm going to have everybody go around and introduce themselves. I'm hosting today. My name is Sean Allen. Our regular host, Andrew Turley, is not available today. Theo, can you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Theo.
Joe.
Hi, I'm Joe.
And Roland.
Hi, I'm Roland Smith.
Awesome. So hopefully people will be able to put voices to the names if they listen to this recording. I know Ryan's going to listen to this later. So we don't have Andy and his magic script, which I still haven't learned how to use, in the sense that I have not even started trying. So I wanted to start with a couple of pony up issues and then move on to seeing if there was anything anybody wanted to discuss. And from there, as we discussed before we started recording, Roland opened some stuff up earlier on the Zulip about being interested in changes to the string API, which we're very interested in. And we're going to talk about some string API stuff for at least a little while, probably mostly Roland and Joe. So let's see. Let's start with Ryan's issue on the Pony Up repo that he opened last night. This is 133 on Pony Up. Have you seen this, Theo?
Yes, briefly.
What are your thoughts here? I feel like this might be harder in the Pony Up implementation, but I think
you feel like this is more intuitive than I think it should be done regardless of how difficult it is.
I hate intuitive, but I think this is what people are more likely to
more
try.
Discovered. How about that?
Yes. Yes, more discoverable based on experience that people have already had. Yes.
I think on those grounds I can agree with this.
Yeah, okay. All right, so I'm going to label this as enhancement and help wanted because, hey, if somebody wants to dive in and do this one, cool. Do you think somebody who's new to the code base could do this one, or is this kind of tricky?
I think they should be able to.
Okay, I'll put good first issue on it. This would be a breaking change. I say yes. We dropped the old method. Okay. This would be.
It's really just a change of making the like the part in the example that he has, how it currently works is that you could say release or you could say release dash 0.33.1 and both would work. And this would really just be changing that so that it's another command line argument rather than being part of the same argument.
Yep, that makes sense.
And then, you know, for passing that over to all the package name management code, you just, you know, slap them together with a hyphen in the middle as you do with everything else. So it's really a minor change.
So the other Pony Up thing that I wanted to go over was related to the, there's a draft PR that I started opening up last
Pony
night.
C, right?
Yes. Which is in Pony C.
It's called Whip.
Yes, it's called
3598.
$35.98. The idea behind this was I realized that when I was trying to help Ryan with an issue, and Ryan's a regular contributor, there was no documentation in the installation stuff for, hey, for GNU glibc versions of the pre-built Pony C, it might not work on your version. You'd get an error like this. And here's how you can either A, find a version that might work for you, or B, if there is no version that would work for you, request that we start creating new nightly and release builds for whatever particular glibc distro that you use. I realized as part of this that, one, some of the functionality that would be needed to do that currently doesn't exist in PonyUp, in that I can't with PonyUp say, hey, can you show me the different packages, say the different PonyC versions that are available, right? Like Muscle, yeah. glibc, Ubuntu 18.
Currently the solution to that would be to actually go to the Cloudsmith website and look at the listings there.
Right. So I didn't create an issue for that yet on the PonyUp because I wanted to about adding support that, because I wanted to talk a little bit about it today. And the question would be, is it better to say, hey, here's how you can find these versions right now, and this would be helpful in general, or would it be that that's something that we might want to add down the road, but it's not an immediate thing, but the most helpful thing for this particular problem would actually be to have a table which basically says, hey, if you're using this particular glibc distro, you should install, this is the command that you should run, this is the one that you should install, right? So like, for example, somebody using Linux Mint 19.3 like Ryan, that's based on Ubuntu 18, so that's actually what they want to run. And we're not going to do a Linux 19.3 because it's the same binary at that point as 18.084, it's just extra work to have it done. So maybe what would be more helpful to people would be to have a table that says, for your distro, then please install using this. If you run into this error, then please open an issue. If you don't see your distro here, please open an issue and we'll add one or update this table to have the correct information, something like that. I'm not sure what path we should go down with that. Perhaps both. Thoughts?
All right. So I guess my first thought is that one option, or at least one approach that solves part of this problem, would be to actually have something like, say, a find command, like the sort of thing you would have in most operating system package managers, mm-hmm. that's, you know, you give it some string, it searches for that, you know, so you can say, you know, you can search for PonyC Ubuntu and then it will give you PonyC Ubuntu, the like a list of those packages. The problem there would be actually like filtering through, like, would this only show, you know, the latest nightly and the latest release versions, or would it show everything, which I think would probably be a bad idea. Like the whole history of nightlies and releases might be a bit much and overwhelming for like even for a particular platform.
Yeah, I would think you would be limited. Does anybody else
probably just
have thoughts?
Latest nightly or a few.
Do folks have thoughts?
No.
Was that a no?
Sorry, yes, it was. It was just more of a grunt, wasn't it?
I think it was the proper response to, do you have an opinion if you don't?
So it looks like we could use do you know if the Cloudsmith API has exposes search?
Actually the query, like we use, like, so PonyUp is pretty much based entirely on just querying Cloudsmith with just like a set of keywords. So it would really just be that. Of course, it would be a bit more complicated if you were to make a mapping between, like, say, okay, Linux Mint is actually, you know, based on Ubuntu, or like Manjaro is based on Arch, or, you know, something along those lines.
Right. I'm not sure that I don't think that we for a find we should be supporting that. Right.
No,
that,
I don't think so.
Yeah. But I just tried it. I did a search of Pony C space Ubuntu under specifically under the releases packages, right? And it brought up the two releases that are there. So if we did that and had some limited number, like 3, 5 or something like that, that sounds good. There might be a little bit to be worked out on that. Roland or Robert, who's also joined the call, have you used Pony Up? Do you have any thoughts on this?
I haven't used it enough to have many thoughts.
That is a completely acceptable answer. It's an answer that I love from a lot of people. I use it a lot. Sorry, I don't have thoughts at this time. Okay. Theo, do we have an issue for find, and maybe I'm not remembering it? Or
I don't think so.
Okay. You want to create one?
Yeah.
I put that. So then the issue would become, still people have like Linux Mint 13 or whatever. I'm thinking for that PR then, that for now, until find exists, I could take that PR and this would live past even when find exists, of here for this glibc distro, here's a table of things which are definitely supported, and use this, right? And if you don't see yours, then open an issue, and so long as it's still supported, we will add a pre-built we'll add pre-built binaries for you, something like that. Does that sound reasonable?
I'm sorry. So your thoughts are, like, say if someone would want to make a request for a particular platform, they would like open an issue.
Yes.
And say that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. That seems reasonable.
And we would have a table where it's like, hey, here's the Pony Up command that you want to run in order to install for this particular glibc. So like Ubuntu 18, Linux Mint 19.3, both of those would be on there. And they would have the command that Ryan ran, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So one other one which came up on the issue where I was talking to Ryan related to that. The platform default, right? If I said my default platform is Ubuntu 18 dot whatever, is that going to mess with, like, if I try to install Corral or something else?
If you set the platform default, it will change the default package. Well, no, because the platform only matters for Pony C, right?
Okay, so that default is only for Pony. That's right. Okay.
Yeah, because the platform for everything else, you know, Pony C is the only thing that's platform dependent.
Right. Good. That's a good
it's
point.
It's the compiler and the runtime.
Right. So we should probably be telling people to run this platform command and then do the installation, right? Using the regular command. I think that would be better, because then anytime they want to do a nightly or anything else, all of the regular commands will work. Right? That's probably what we should do, is say, run this command, then run pony up as you normally would.
Yes, or you could just pass the, you know, the platform flag if it's like a one-time thing.
Right, but then
if you just one-off want to install a particular package for a different platform.
So let's say that I install for Ubuntu 18, right? And I do the --- platform to do that. And then I want to upgrade to the next release later, right? I have to do --- platform again, right?
Yeah. The default command will set it so that it continues to be the default. But otherwise, if it's just a one-off thing, you can give it explicitly.
Yeah, I think we should definitely be directing people to set the default then, because it will make all the other instructions much easier to write and people less likely to get tripped up.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so I'm going to add a issue for PonyUp to clarify default there, because Ryan, I read the README and I had a hard time remembering how to use the platform's options, and Ryan read it and didn't understand that it was. So I'm going to open an issue to clarify platform options in README. So while I'm typing this up, does anybody have anything they wanted to bring up to go over before we have the string discussion? I'll take that as a no. Well, Roland, would you like to start a bit of a string discussion with Joe? And you two can talk about that a little and your thoughts and what you were thinking, and Joe can respond there, and I'll start typing up this issue.
Absolutely. So I'll start with what I was thinking. So I guess I'll when I looked at string initially, I read the first description that was there in the class that said a string was a sequence of characters, but also noticed that it seemed to be actually a sequence of bytes given the methods. I looked a little further, saw that there were a bunch of functions actually in that class also that seemed to deal with UTF-8 encoding and doing some back and forth, so you could sort of work through a string that was UTF-8 encoded and I guess that's when it sort of occurred to me that it looks like that could certainly be I think better, and the way it is would be very confusing, I think, to a lot of certainly beginners who were trying to, who would maybe assume that, a string was a sequence of bytes and individual characters, and then possibly find out that sometimes when they read a file or got input from the keyboard, if the system was configured for UTF-8, they were not certainly not getting a single byte per character, and all such, weirdness and bugs would ensue from that. So I took a crack at making some changes to try to, basically change the class so that it was a sequence of characters. For the time being, I left it after getting a bunch of feedback, I guess, on the on Tulip. I thought it'd be simpler, I guess, initially just to try to assume UTF-8 is the default encoding. And see if I can get that to work. So I made a little progress doing that. And that's really where I am. I've found now a lot of changes throughout within the standard library where things would need to be changed. I also came across a few places, it looks like actually also in Pony-C, in the compiler itself, there are some assumptions there that there's actually a function for UTF-8 encoding. So there's some assumption there about UTF-8. There also looks like in some of the utilities, like in, I think it's readline, there's some code there that's assuming that it's a UTF-8 encoding in strings. So it seems like a lot of that could be cleaned up, and all of that really should be encapsulated within the string class, and that anyone using the string class shouldn't have to, as long as they're just working with strings, be aware of encoding. Obviously, when they go to write that string out to a file or something, there would have to be a conversion to bytes, and that would have to have some way of ideally of specifying how you would like to encode that string as bytes, and let you choose how you do it. Just in case, just be clear, most of my experience has been with Java, so I think a lot of the way I think about this is kind of probably going to be influenced by the way you know, Java handles strings and bytes, you know, to keep them completely separate. And it's a very sort of strong, you know, clear line of demarcation, and you convert from string to bytes, and always specify an encoding or decoding some way, or, you know, and then there is a system default if you don't, but it's always possible to specify the encoding or the decoding when you move between sort of those two representations. So that's where I am. Yeah, I'd be interested, I guess, to hear others' thoughts on what can be done to improve string and what issues I might have missed.
Joe, do you have thoughts?
Yeah, so I guess the first question I have to hopefully kind of better understand the approach that you're taking, it sounded like to me from your description of the approach that the refactor you're doing is toward like having the internals of string be a pointer or array of U32s, or
U8. UTF-8 encoded. So variable, basically variable width representation, which makes things like, you know, getting the length of a string a rather more compute intensive operation than it is currently.
Yeah. So the, but well, I guess what I was asking about specifically was the internal representation. Is it still a pointer of U8, or is the internal data structure and the types thereof, is it changing, mm-hmm. or are you just changing the algorithms with which you iterate over?
It's still an array of U8s.
Just checking, because it's what I was expecting, but I wanted to make sure that was still in alignment with.
I mean, it would in some ways make it easier to do an array of U32s, but that would also be a larger memory consumption.
What made me want to ask is when you mentioned when you're writing to a file, like choosing how to encode it as bytes, in which case, like, I was just making the assumption that if you're the file you want to write has the same encoding as the string instance that you're using, which in your example is like always UTF-8. So if you're writing the UTF-8 file, you wouldn't have to do any copy conversion or anything.
Very efficient. Writing UTF-8, correct.
Yeah. So for those, I know Roland's aware, but for those who may or may not be aware, in the Zulip chat, I shared some thoughts on this, and I won't like duplicate all of that here in this conversation, but if anyone was interested, you could go to the Zulip chat, go to the contribute to Pony stream, and then there's a topic in the stream called changes to string class, where some of this conversation has some context. What I outlined there was sort of like four different approaches as I have under my consideration in the past when thinking about this topic. I think everybody agrees that the current API is not ideal in terms of preventing programmer issues with like assuming that everything is single byte encoded. Within the UTF-8, like if everyone assumes that, I think we all agree that the string needs to have encoding as a more first class citizen in its interface. What I laid out was the four different approaches. In summary, approach one was pretty similar to what Roland was describing. We assume that a string is always UTF-8, and if someone wants to use, to or from a different encoding, there would be a copy conversion process that they could use to get it into that UTF-8 string But the advantage being that it has easy ergonomic interchange because all functions that accept a string now know that there's one standard type and it's all standardized at that point once you get it in or out of the system. The different encodings are only possible at the edges, right? And then once you have a string, it's always the same encoding, which does have a simplicity to it that is appealing in that way. I also talked about options involving a pattern where every time you try to use the string, you specify the encoding you want to use it with, say as a type parameter. And another approach in which the type parameter is part of the class that could be used to designate the encoding when you're instantiating the string. And that would be a way to reduce complexity at the call sites for operations on the string, but it adds complexity to the interchange because every we'd want to have some kind of interface for, I proposed in that approach three, an interface called string, and then we have like encoded string, which has a type parameter on it. And because of the way concrete types work in Pony, an encoded string with one type argument as the encoding would be a different type in the type system from an instance of that class with a different encoding. And so you have to have an interface which govern them all, or not govern them all, but which they all adhere to. That's what's one option. So all of these options do involve, like all these options that involve multiple encodings so far that I've described, they do involve some overhead for accomplishing that, which is like virtual call overhead in some cases, or memory overhead if you embedded the encoding within the type. The approach four that I mentioned was, and this is kind of like what I'm personally, I think, find appealing at this point after thinking about it this level. I think I erroneously described approach two earlier when it was a little bit more like what I'm about to describe here. So approach four, what I described was, so we say, let's say that we say encoding UTF-8 is the default, so that anytime that you're not specifying encodings, string always uses that encoding. String has this, array of bytes within it, and when you do an encoding aware operation on the string, it will use the type parameter for that function, and UTF-8 is the default type argument. So kind of by default, everything is the same as it was in approach one, except you have the extra flexibility of being able to swap out the encoding when you know that it's different from UTF-8. And so if you were to carry around this string that has a different encoding from UTF-8, everywhere where you did an encoding-aware operation, you would specify the alternate encoding that you used. And you could even, if you chose to, you could even wrap that in a, you could kind of combine it with what I didn't describe fully earlier, but in approach two, you could combine it with this approach where you have something that has the same interface as string, but it is like a string plus an encoding that could carry this around for you if you needed it to, which would be a little bit of extra memory overhead, but it would save the call site patterns. So that approach four would be sort of like trying to accommodate all of the possible use cases. I see it as the most flexible approach in that it lets you accomplish pretty much any conceivable use case without performance detriment. You just have to use the appropriate pattern for your use case. And so like I kind of see this as a blending of the earlier approaches, but it allows for more flexibility. And so that's kind of where I'm leaning now is to say that we do want to allow alternate encodings to be possible, but to say that UTF-8 would be the default for everything, and if you just use string out of the box and do nothing to it, it assumes UTF-8 until you specify otherwise, either by using type arguments at the call site for encoding aware methods, or by wrapping it in an object that does that for you and fulfills the same interface as string. It's pretty long-winded, but it's kind of where I'm at. It's like I want to have the flexibility for other encodings to be possible with zero copy, because zero copy is pretty important in Pony. But I agree that UTF-8 should be the default and that it should be easy and sort of pit of success for people to fall into with UTF-8.
Okay. So the idea would be that if you're, for example, creating a string by reading from a file that uses some other encoding, you'd be able to effectively not have to convert those bytes, and you'd still have a string that you'd work with.
Yes.
Or any other place you were creating a string from a string of bytes. You could match the encoding of those bytes.
Yeah. So you think about it like the string itself, the string class itself is not encoding aware, and it by default delegates out to a UTF-8 primitive that knows how to encode, you know, to and from the UTF-8 encoding with the bytes that you use. And so by default, it's UTF-8. Other call sites can specify other encodings if they choose.
I have a question, Joe, at that point then. What's the difference between a string and array at that point? And array U8?
So in what way? I could talk about, there's a few different areas of that conversation. Do you want me to kind of exhaustively go through all of them that are on my mind, or is there some specific part you want to target?
I'm just wondering, so we're talking about it as string, but if so the way I would imagine it then at that point is that when you describe that is I hear it as, well, if UTF-8 is assumed, then I'm like, well, that's basically array U8. And then there are different things which can operate on it based on some assumption of encoding. Am I wrong in that? Is there a difference between array U8 and string as you would imagine it in that case where you said that it assumes UTF-8, or am I on the right path in understanding what you're saying?
I think from a performance perspective, right, it's the same internal representation. They both have exactly the same, like they have the size, the alloc size, and the
base
the pointer itself, right? So they both have the same internal representation. They're distinct types, and like the reason why it's important, I don't know if you're going down this road, but if you're trying to get at the idea that maybe we don't need the string class or whatever, I mean, the problem is that because array is generic, it cannot have string-specific methods on it, and so it's rather inconvenient.
No, I wasn't trying to get to that. I was just trying to understand. Like, I figured you at minimum you would say string is needed because there are string-specific methods, right, on it. But I didn't know if there was anything else, and I was. I probably didn't formulate the question very well for what I was thinking at that moment.
Yeah. So in my suggestion, there would kind of be, so in order to create more flexibility, and this is maybe where some might draw objection, right? In order to create more flexibility, there would be, in addition to string. So I'm just going to give them names to make it easier to talk about. So let's say that we have, string as the class that has, you know, it's structured internally like an array U8, and it uses UTF-8 for all encoding aware operations by default, and it has no other overhead of any kind in terms of performance overhead. And then you have this other option where, so with that stream class, if you're going to do operations on it that have a different encoding from UTF-8, you would need to specify the encoding at every call site, which might become inconvenient if you needed to pass that to, let's say, another library that was using encoding aware operations under strings, and they didn't give you the option to pass a type parameter through for the encoding, then you might want to have it wrapped in like the secondary object that has the string contained within it as like an embed object, right? So it gets laid out in the same struct under the hood, but it would have this additional field of which encoding to use for each encoding aware operation case. So it's sort of like an alternative string class that carries the encoding with it, and they would both adhere to, let's say, an interface called string-like. I think the stringable is already taken, but let's say, you know, or any string, for example, could be the name of it, right? So you have string, you have like string with encoding as another class, and they're both subtypes of the interface any string. And so if someone wanted to be flexible with like a library that needed to accept either, they could accept the interface of any string, or they could have a more limited interface for exactly the methods they use, which I've talked about a little bit with Sean before. But then they the encoding would be embedded within some of them. The encoding would not be embedded within others. And the only libraries that need that flexibility would use the overhead. I mean, this becomes kind of an interesting problem because if you have this wrapped class as sort of a first class thing that a lot of people use, then it becomes rather cumbersome for library authors to have to assume they have to use the interface any string instead of just using string. So that's possibly an argument against allowing this wrapper case. And maybe we should say that library authors should instead, if they want to allow flexible encodings, they should allow you to pass through the encoding as a type parameter. I'm not sure exactly how that would pan out. But in either case, it's like we're talking about things that are not possible under proposal one and like how to make them most ergonomic. Whereas like I think this what I was calling approach four is it has all the things that are possible in approach one are still possible in approach four, but there's room for you to do some other stuff as well that may not be quite so ergonomic. And figuring out the right ergonomics for that is an interesting problem.
I guess there are two things, I guess. So I guess two things kind of come to mind. One is there are a number of functions within string that take strings as parameters. And I think a lot of those functions, at least as I haven't changed them, they still are comparing things at the byte level. So if you were to do that, you'd have to make those functions, I guess, capable of, you know, comparing two different strings or taking a string as a parameter that's encoded differently than the string. So you'd add quite a bit of complexity there in some of those functions for sure.
Well, not necessarily if we were to take the route of, say, making the string class have a type argument that is the encoding, and then saying, you know, we have the equals method that's doing a byte-wise comparison. So long as, you know, say it's UTF-8 and the characters are normalized, that should be fine. And we only allow comparison. We only define the equality method for strings of the same encoding. Type. Yeah. And then, you know, if you want to pass a string and make them comparable, you would just have to create one of the correct encoding. Mm-hmm. That would be one option.
Right, that would be an approach. That would make it certainly easier to implement, a little clumsier to work with, I guess. But and then
it's only clumsy when you have other encodings involved, right?
Right. If you're using the feature at all, if you're just always stick to the same encoding, it wouldn't do it, right.
Yeah, and depending on your encoding, you don't really want to assume that two different encodings can be compared byte by byte. It doesn't really make a lot of sense, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Okay, and then the other, I guess, is literals. To just assume the default for literals, or how do you deal with that?
I mean, for literals from the compiler, like from the source.
Yeah, right.
Because currently we assume UTF-8, right? Okay. That's a good question.
Yeah, I would suggest that we say literals are always UTF-8 unless you explicitly specify that in some other way, and that some other way is something that'd be interesting to talk about from like a syntax perspective. But I think most cases, maybe this is, you know, me being, I know I was trying to be ultra flexible before, but I think most cases of dealing with different encodings involve like taking that data from something external to the program and bringing it in, whether that's like a, you know, coming in on a packet over the network or a file with the file system. I think that string literals with different encodings is probably not useful to us. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, some people might argue, and I'd probably be sympathetic to the argument that we should have a like byte string. I know you mentioned that, Roland, in the chat, that we consider having a byte string literal that was distinct from a string literal. Although if you're only using, you wouldn't need to use a byte string literal unless you were trying to have a string literal that had like invalid UTF-8 bytes next to each other. So you'd be using a lot of like the /X, like the /X escape codes. Anything with like just normal strings, it should be directly like the byte should be directly equivalent to where we could do a let me just rephrase that. So yeah, if your string literal doesn't contain any non-ASCII characters, then
right.
We can do a zero copy conversion of it to like a byte string if you need to. But there shouldn't be a need for the byte string literal, I think. I think so.
All right. There's also, it comes to a fifth maybe option, which is that you let the choice of how you want to represent strings internally be sort of a compile time decision. And I guess I say that because I could imagine for, you know, if you were in Asia dealing with, you know, and your system was mostly Chinese, so most of your strings were going to be multi-byte, you might find like a UTF, you know, 16 encoding more efficient than using 8, and might just want to do that globally across the board.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Like when I first read that suggestion, I was opposed to it, but mm-hmm. I'm not sure I'm opposed to it anymore. I don't know how that would be implemented in today's Pony compiler, it feels to me like, you know, so let's say that we did, you know, for now say that like everything is UTF-8 by default. That does leave us room in the future if we have somebody come in and say, you know, listen, I want this feature, and then we could figure out a way to make the compiler support it. But I wouldn't want to hold up progress on this for waiting for the compiler to support something like that, because it's going to be a pretty hairy issue, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
So it could be something that we lazily support when somebody asks for it, kind of.
Yeah, and also I think it's a fairly common opinion that compilers make this day and age that the character set used for the source files are UTF-8. Of course, you know, there's definitely an argument that a compiler switch to switch encoding would be a nice feature, but I think for now that's sort of like the character literals that we allow from the source level is sort of like a secondary concern to fixing the string API.
Right. I believe this, that the Pony tutorial says, does not say that UTF-8 is required for the source code. It says it can be any.
I don't believe that's the case.
Tutorial says ASCII, actually.
It's on top of ASCII, yeah. So, but when it's extended, like, ISO, what is it, 88? Yeah, those, the pre sort of Unicode code pages, I think, are also supported. Is that considered, I think that's important to people, or is that?
I think it was one of those things where I can't speak for the creators of that decision, but it seemed to me like one of those things where it's like just punting for now, and saying that Pony source code is ASCII. I think that we should not find much opposition or any opposition that we said that Pony source code is UTF-8. I don't think anyone's relying on Pony source code being limited to ASCII. I think it's one of those things where it's like, oh, well, it's kind of unfortunate, but we're just punting for now.
I think that statement that it's ASCII is actually incorrect. It's that it's single byte. Would be the correct statement there. I think that the ASCII is actually just wrong. Like when it says ASCII, it's wrong. What it's attempting to convey is that it's limited to single byte.
I think that's right. But I think it's what I thought it was saying was you can use, if you want to use any of the extended, what I'll call extended ASCII's, sort of the old, Latin or, Russian or Cyrillic or all those other code pages, you can use any of those as well.
I do not believe that is the case in the current compiler.
Okay.
So yeah, I think that should be, that should probably be updated as well.
Okay.
What do we want to update it to say?
I'm not sure.
I would just suggest we wait to update it until we have the UTF-8 support and then just say it's UTF-8.
Okay.
That's fair.
Okay. I mean, you can put single byte UTF-8 encoding stuff in string literals and it works.
Yes. Yeah. You can't use them for identifiers.
Yes.
Yeah, the Pony parser is just like not aware of them. It obliviously sort of passes them along through without any awareness of it, right?
So it's sort of a conscious decision at the time to make the compiler simpler.
I mean, I know some people love to be able to use their little single ligature thing or whatever to do the arrow, but I'm just like, I don't know of all the things I care about in this world, that's so far down on my list of things that I care about.
Well, nowadays it's more of a rendering concern for the editor, for the most part.
Yeah, the ligatures, I usually see those in presentation layer.
I stopped listening to you because you said nowadays.
Anyway,
I'm not saying I use
for pushing on this as well. I want to just express appreciation for you kind of taking up this cause and working on it. That's really great.
Absolutely.
We've been waiting for somebody to come along.
Any discussion about this is very meaningful.
Yes. We encourage people to come in and thoughtfully start up discussions and contribute in whatever way that they feel comfortable.
Okay, well, quite all right. I've enjoyed it. I've got a strange interest in Unicode. I don't know why, but it's always kind of fascinated me a bit.
Yeah, I've fallen down that rabbit hole in the past.
Yeah.
The other one that I'd love somebody to come in and thoughtfully contribute to is if you look at like some of the interfaces like Seek, it's a little haphazard across strings and arrays and other things that you should probably be able to have a common interface to seek across. And there is a request for an RFC on the RFC repo, as it's the request for RFCs are under the issues tab for that. Should anybody be listening and happen to be inspired by what Roland has started to do. That would be cool.
To discuss here. It's pretty related actually. The question from an interface perspective is right now the string class is a subtype of sequence U8, right? What Sean said seek earlier, SEQ, short for sequence. It's short for seek U8. The string class is currently a subtype of seek U8, and that gives it compatibility with anything it expects an array U8, or rather anything that expects a seek U8, so it's compatible with array U8. And I think one of the things that we probably want to do as part of this is say that it's like a seek U32. It cannot be, because of the way Pony interfaces work, it cannot be a seek U8 and a seek U32 at the same time, even though it kind of conceptually is, right? Like conceptually, we have this thing that is, it can be iterated over as bytes, or it can be iterated over as U32s. But we can have methods for both, but we can't fulfill both interfaces at the same time because the names would clash. So the method names, that is. So we have this sort of sub decision within this string refactoring conversation, the sub decision to make about whether we want to say that string is an array of U32 integers or an array of U8 integers from an iteration perspective. When you call each for, not each, what is it, values. Call values, for example, what do you get back? I would argue that we should have support for both in the methods, but only one of them will actually support the sequence interface. And I would argue that should probably be the
You actually do have support for both. I think you have support. There is an array function.
Yeah, like two array,
right?
Which
gives you an array U8.
Yeah.
So I would think if we changed it to a seek 32, you just can call the array function to get down to the underlying bytes, if that's what you want.
Yeah, it would be a seek 32.
The only thing I would say about that real quick is that, like, I think that like you should have, like, so we have values iterating over U32, for example. I think we should still have byte_values as a method on the string. Because if you make someone convert from string to array, there's like an allocation cost to that. And it may also be difficult with capabilities sometimes to convert, because let's say it's an ISO that you have and you want to iterate over bytes. You'd have to like convert away, or let's say Tran, for example, that makes it easier to iterate. You have to convert to an array Tran and then like convert back to a string if you need that uniqueness still. So there's, I would argue we still need to have the byte methods on the string class, but also the conversion to array so that you can get the byte iteration without converting. But if you want it to be a seek U8, you have to convert to an array and then you get the seek U8. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Is an array already, is array a seek already? Is it implement?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And so there may be areas now, like with that change, there may be areas now that like, areas of the code base that break, and maybe that's the ones you alluded to earlier, Roland. Like, there's probably a lot of areas of the code base that are relying on string being a seek U8 right now that need to be revised to either like convert to the array or use the methods prefixed with like byte, right? Byte values or byte whatever, like pop byte, push byte sort of thing.
That's right.
Some of the above need to be adapted in some way. There's also methods that like, we have byte seek, which is interesting, right? So we have this type alias called byte seek that is, rather than being an interface, it is a union of string and array U8. And the reason, I believe the reason why it exists is because if it was an interface, and anyone could supply that implementation. Like ByteSeq is used for cases where, I think, like, for example, when we print something and we call the underlying printf, or puts, or whatever it calls underlying, it grabs out the pointer and the length. And if we allowed anyone to give us a pointer and a length and we would print it, we would break memory safety. So ByteSeq is hard-coded to only allow these two options. And so ByteSeq might need to be reworked in some way as a result. I don't know exactly what the implications are, but just there are some things that expect to be able to grab the pointer and print it. And I think that we should maybe replace, ByteSeq should be fine to stay how it is as long as they both support grabbing the pointer and the size for passing the amplify functions.
Okay, I'm aware it's already 3 o'clock, so I don't know how much. Joe, you'd be interested in looking through some change. I'll send some code your way if you want to look over.
Sure, great. Yeah, I'd be happy to look it over, whatever you've got. Yeah, of course.
The RFC I mentioned, by the way, is RFC numbers is issue 61 on the well, the request for RFC is issue 61 on the PonyLang/RFCs website, in case anybody's listening along and gets interested in wanting to take on the audit and changes stuff that's there. We are at the end of our normal allotted time. Does anybody have anything they want to go over before we call it a day? Cool. All right. Thanks for coming, everyone. And we'll see you next Tuesday.